You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
Premillennialism teaches that at Jesus' second coming, he will deliver the righteous and judge the ungodly. Then the righteous will enter into a period we call the millennium, 1,000 years, of peace and righteousness, where Jesus establishes on earth his physical reign of all the nations. Okay? His rule over all the nations, including a restored national Israel, reconstituted Israel, that was promised by God. And this Israel is going to recognize their Messiah, Jesus of Nazareth. They are going to recognize the true Messiah. And so they will all be saved and make up a nation. And then all the nations will worship Jesus as King and Lord. And so during this millennium, in this future millennium, you know, it's going to be characterized. It's not going to be this amorphous type of kingdom. No, it's going to be concrete. It's going to be earthly, physical. It's going to be characterized socially, politically, ethnically, spiritually, again, physically. You know, this is why Christians pray to the Father, you know, may your kingdom come. And this is a big mistake that all millennialists deny, is this earthly physical kingdom. And it really stems back to Augustine, Constantine, and the Christian Roman Empire, where you had this not just dismissal of, but even many characterized premillennialism as heresy. You know, this idea of, well, why are you looking for a future kingdom? We have it here right now. There is a history. And a lot of all millennialists do not, they're just simply not aware that their tradition, their human tradition of all millennialism stems back not to the Bible, but it stems back to a period in our church history that went awry, let's just say. So, and of course, was that trajectory, of course, went to, as we know, of Roman Catholicism today. I believe premillennialism is the correct biblical view. Typically, the millennial debate begins in Revelation 20. It just drives me nuts. I even hear premillennialists begin at Revelation 20. Grant Osborne, a premillennialist, he has this major commentary in the book of Revelation. He has a whole section beginning in chapter 20. And it's amazing how chapter breaks influence interpreters. You know, you often say, oh, you know, it's like, well, yeah, we know that chapter breaks are not inspired, but they let them influence. It needs to be studied more, I think, the psychology of chapter breaks and how much they really influence interpreters. And of course, versification influences interpreters even more. I mean, they're just arbitrary. Just look at, I've been over this before, you know, I mean, just all these chapter breaks are just arbitrary. Genesis, there shouldn't be a chapter break in the very first chapter in the Bible, at Genesis chapter 2. So Matthew 24:25, why is there a chapter break? It's a unified discourse, right? 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and 5, 2 Thessalonians chapter 1 and 2. I mean, I could go down the list. It's just truly amazing. And yet, that in Revelation 20, it seems that's where the millennial debate often begins. Well, not often, inevitably, it begins there. And it should not. That's not where the narrative begins. It bifurcates the unified, cohesive discourse. The narrative begins before Revelation 20. Back in Revelation 19:11, you have a cause and effect action, and you have Christ, you know, during his second coming, Notice I said during the second coming, not at the second coming. The second coming does not begin in Revelation 19, as is so commonly thought. No, that's just part and parcel of the second coming of Christ. The second coming of Christ began back in Revelation, between Revelation 6 and 7. And then you have the trumpet judgments and bowl judgments. And you have Armageddon here. Revelation 19, there's a cause and effect action. And the victory of Jesus causes the defeat of three enemies of God. Three enemies of God. Not just two, not just the false prophet and the beast, but Satan as well. And so, and of course, Satan's immediate punishment when Jesus returns is his binding for 1,000 years. So, in other words, Jesus' battle victory occurs during his second coming. And then you have the binding of Satan. Therefore, the binding of Satan must begin at the second coming. Okay, and, you know, of course, premillennialism is always under attack by interpreters who approach Bible prophecy, you know, with their own frameworks, right? And these frameworks, what they do is, these hermeneutical frameworks, they preclude future reality of key prophecies. And the for example, these interpreters, they'll collapse these biblical prophecies as, for example, already happened in the past. You know, that's preterism, who believes that these prophecies happened in the first century or the early part of the second century. Then you have the historicists who will collapse these prophecies into the inter-advental age, right? So they'll say, well, these prophecies they're not in the future. They've just been happening throughout church history. And then you have, of course, idealism. They'll just say, well, these aren't even historical events. These are just ideas, right? Concepts. But premillennialism, I believe, takes these warnings of the Bible seriously as they relate to the future intervention of God's Son with humankind at the end of the age. And now, that being said, of course, I don't believe that this is a first-tier gospel tenet. Okay, so in other words, you know, I don't believe that this should break gospel fellowship with fellow believers. One's salvation does not depend on, you know, whether or not you're amillennial or postmillennial or premillennial. Okay, it's a second tier tenet of faith, because I believe first tiers relate to issues of salvation. Now, when I say second tier, don't think that's unimportant. No, second tier is a very important cluster of doctrines, because I really believe that they will affect one's sanctification. If a theology comes along and says, "Oh, those warnings are not for you; they're for someone else," okay, that's a pretty, I mean, you got to be pretty certain to make those type of statements. So it is a second tier faith. I don't put it in a third tier level. I believe these issues of eschatology are second tier. And again, when I say first, second tier, there are gradations as a Klein. So it's not always absolute. Okay, first tier, second tier, there can be these gradations and on a Klein, different degrees of importance. I'm going to give you four reasons why, you know, I believe the millennial debate is important. And in other words, why I believe that premillennial theology, more specifically, is important. Why premillennial theology matters, okay? So the first reason is is that Satan is not bound during the church age. Contra amillennialism. Amillennialism says that Satan is bound in some sense. But, and by the way, for example, these reasons, of course, each one can be a whole program in itself, so I'm not going to unpack everything here. This is kind of just a brief program on these four reasons. So, Satan is not bound during the church age. Why do I believe that? Well, I believe it because of 1 Peter 5:8. Now, I can see the amillennial rolling their eyes because they've heard this many times. But again, you know, this is the biblical data. I have never had an amillennial give a satisfactory response to 1 Peter 5:8. I'm sorry. He is wrong. When you compare, well, let me juxtapose these two passages. The amillennialist, right? The amillennialist says that the two following activities are going on right now at the same time, all right? First one, Revelation 20, verse 2 and 3, says, he seized the dragon, the ancient serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and tied him up for 1,000 years, okay? He tied him up for 1,000 years. The angel then threw him into the abyss. He's in the abyss, okay? Is the world the abyss? No. He threw him into the abyss and locked it and sealed it so that he could not deceive the nations until the 1,000 years were finished. Okay, so all millennialists believe that is happening right now. They also believe this is happening right now, 1 Peter 5:8, that Satan is roaring like a lion on the prowl looking for someone to devour. You cannot have Satan roaring around like a lion on the prowl looking for someone to devour and yet at the same time affirm, oh, yeah, Revelation 20, yeah, that teaches that Satan is, he's tied up, he's bound, he's thrown in the abyss, and he's locked up. I'm sorry, but that's just, when you have it, I think it's an indication of their deep-seated tradition. They cannot even see their inconsistency on this. Now, of course, they have an answer or two. Satan is not bound during the church age, okay? So, in other words, premillennialism takes seriously the spiritual battle, that we don't see, right? We take it seriously that the Bible portrays within the spirit world, and it's going to escalate just before Christ returns. An additional point on this reason is, amillennialism believes that we are, at this very moment, believes that we're living in the blessed millennial age. Listen, we are not living in the blessed millennial age. We are living in a wicked age where injustice, immorality, and no fear of God dominates the world. And amillennialism, let me be very clear, amillennialism minimizes this by their amillennial theology. This is not the millennial age. We long for the day when our righteous king physically returns and physically reigns on an earthly kingdom, not this amorphous type of stuff. He will physically defeat his enemies. He will break them. He will break them with an iron scepter and smash them like a potter's jar. There's an outworking. There is a systematic way in which God is going to judge the world. It's not going to be a snap of the fingers. And we're ushered in the eternal age. We're on the clouds, harps. I'm not saying that they believe that, but literally, we're going to be playing harps or anything. But the way they depict the future is like it's amorphous. I don't know how other way to explain it. It's amorphous. But that's not how God works. And that's certainly not how God described his return. Number two reason why premillennialism, this millennial debate, is important. This first point dovetails into this, and that is it rightly takes into consideration the complex nature of God's dealings with his people. Now, by complexity, I'm not talking about difficult to understand. I'm talking about, complex versus simple event. In other words, let me put it this way. For example, the judgment of God of the plagues on Egypt was not a simple event. It was a complex event. There's a number of plagues that and there's a complexity. Not just of the elements within all these judgments, but the time period You know, it wasn't a snap of the finger. Oh, God judged Israel. God judged Egypt, and it was over with. No, there was a complex. God is glorified in the complexity, nature of the complex nature of the way he judges, the way he redeems, the way he redeems. I mean, very complex, wouldn't you say that? I mean, it's been thousands of years. You know, come on, God, you know, well, just snap your finger and save everyone and we're done with it, right? No, God is glorified in the way he works out his judgments, the way he works out his redeeming purposes. But amillennialism diminishes the glory of God because for them, when Jesus comes back, boom, snap of the finger, judgment is over. No, God is going to be glorified by the complexity of the judgments at his second coming. And again, amillennialism minimizes that reality. So, there's no emphasis on the events leading up to the return of Christ. I mean, again, basically their schema is, well, the return of Christ, you know, it's going to happen in a single day, and they believe that. It's going to happen in a single day, and we're all suddenly going to be ushered into the eternal state. You know, don't blink, right? I'm sorry, this is not what the Bible depicts. Instead, the premillennial view rightly views a complex, comprehensive whole in which God will fulfill his redemptive purposes through stages. You have the Antichrist Great Tribulation, eschatological suffering of the church in Israel, resurrection, rapture, day of the Lord's wrath, which itself is a complex series of events, salvation of Israel, new heavens, earth, complex social, ethnic, political, material aspects of the millennium, and then finally you'll have Satan's final defeat, right? And then the eternal state. So understanding these eschatological complex series of events, it serves to sanctify the believer in this present age. Amillennialism and postmillennialism wrongly rejects this teaching, and thus they lose out on the affirming, sanctifying aspects of this eschatology. Okay, and the third reason, we'll just move on here real quick. Premillennialism does not believe that the world is increasingly getting better before Christ returns, contra postmillennialism. You know, Pat Robertson, Gary DeMar, and company. Once again, it's a tradition. It is a tradition. All you have to do is trace this tradition and you understand where these traditions spawned from. You know, these post-millennial churches, I'm sorry, they're misleading the people of God, teaching that God, you know, will use, God's going to use politics, for example, as a means to, you know, better this world and prepare the world for the gospel. I'm sorry, but, you know, you approach scripture and you see that, no, the Bible teaches that the world is going to increasingly become more wicked before Christ returns, and that only Christ himself is going to, because of that, is going to usher in the age of righteousness. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, you know, Mark 13, Luke 17, Matthew 24, Revelation. And of course, the post-millennial will respond by saying, you have to understand the hermeneutic. They have to respond by saying, oh, those happened in the first century. See, they can't have these passages happen in the future because that would undercut their whole system. They have to have these passages that talk about the world getting wicked and whatnot happening in the first century. And again, I understand it's a bit simplistic. Premillennialism rightly teaches that the world is going to get increasingly more wicked before Christ returns. So wicked that in Matthew 24, Jesus says that the persecution against God's people is going to be unprecedented. Yes, there has been persecution from day one of the church throughout the church age. But the church will experience its worst persecution it's ever experienced just before Christ returns. The vast majority of churches will not preach that. They want to stay away from that. Okay, the last reason is that premillennialism, at least most, not all, affirm the unconditional promises to national Israel. God will remain faithful to his promise to Israel. And amillennialism, postmillennialism, and there are a number of premillennials as well. They deny a future reconstituted national Israel, and thus they deny God's faithfulness to his promise to Israel. And this is important to the millennial debate because it relates to one's fundamental approach to biblical interpretation. I'm gonna say that again. This is important to the millennial debate because it relates to one's fundamental approach to biblical interpretation. And also, it distorts their theology. It distorts their theology of the nature of the church and its role in God's redemptive purposes. So, yeah, these four reasons, I think there could be more reasons cited, but I think these four reasons capture the importance of the millennial debate. Avoid the two extremes, right? Don't diminish this issue. You know, there's people who say, yeah, it's pan-millennial. I'm a pan-millennialist, right? It's all going to pan out at the end. Well, that's one extreme. Of course, that's a sinful attitude. It's not biblical. It sounds pious. It sounds cutesy, but it's not biblical reality. So one extreme is to diminish this issue. The other extreme is to damn people, right? If you're a post-millennial, a millennial, you know, don't damn them to hell. This is not, again, this is not an issue of salvation, but it is an incredibly important issue because it does have ramifications for, I believe, sanctification. Because if you diminish the warnings of Christ or you write them off as applying in some other sense or applying to another group of people, then that does have ramifications of sanctification.
Thanks for listening to Bible Prophecy Daily. We hope you learned something valuable today. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss an episode.